respect is what we like to get at Warrior Connection, and respect is what we look for all the veterans. Hey, last week, Ray Clark did an incredible job as we talked about PTSD. And right now, as we record the show, Ray Clark is speaking to over 200 veteran service officers at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, detailing the ideas and plans. You talk about an impact. That's where it happens. Good deal, Ray. Denise, welcome. How are you today?
Well, we're hanging in today. Just sent you a couple of more emails on current research that you might have not had time to look at, Doug, but one of the big ones was from Dr. Sullivan with Boston University, an update on their scientific work that was published, a published paper talking about our exposures and where we're at on the Gulf War illness and where the Research Advisory Committee was when, if you know, I think I mentioned it to you, Dr. Sullivan is off of the RAC committee now. So she can concentrate on getting info out there and doing the other research that's needed. But it's a critical paper that they put out on update from there. I think you were leading into talking about the gene with PTSD.
Yeah, I mean, you sent that also, and I got a chance to look at that. And they've identified a gene for PTSD. I got to wonder about that because, you know, trying to identify a gene or anything and the probability, when you do research, you can come up with all kinds of correlations. As you know, both you and I were totally involved in research at the university. And just because you look at something and say, oh, I think I got something, doesn't mean there's anything there. I mean, PTSD, and I mean, this continues to bother me day in and day out because I hear more and more all the time, and Ray's giving a talk on it today. Hopefully he'll help some people. But again, let them know that they got to make the choice, you know, go out there and live their life and get their jobs and get their education and move on with everything, although it's very, very difficult. But, you know, there's so many times people want to focus on PTSD as a medical problem. Their PTSD, I think, definitely is a medical problem from the toxic exposures, and that's what Sullivan and all the guys at the RAC are coming up with. So we know that affects how the brain functions, memory, and all this other stuff, and all the neurological, neuromuscular functions. But somehow they keep missing this thing and saying, well, what about the ethical and moral considerations? And we got to talk more about that because, I don't know, for both you and I, we were both asked to make decisions that disrupted our lives entirely and had a horrible effect on everybody. And we knew those orders we were given were wrong.
I know there is the ethical, moral dimension, but there is also the thing of when you have veterans, you know, groups from way back when, you know, with PTSD, why are some veterans affected and can't seem to, you know, come out of it and need help versus others that were in the same surrounding that are able to move forward? So, you know, what the study is, and it was a little dated there, but it gives an idea of what they're looking at. And they're looking at really hard, hard science now, looking at genes and how they might be different in different people. And we need to know that, not because of a claim would be denied if you had that gene. They can't do that. But to find a way to be more effective in treating to, you know, be able to understand it better. And this study, I think there was 400 blood samples, and to have gotten to that level, that's pretty advanced research that's never been able to be done before. It's some of the things that we're focusing on more and more is looking at genetic interfaces and biomarkers to see where the damage is, and, you know, if it can help identify. And, you know, we do have a problem. We have a lot of veterans that misuse the system, okay? We don't know how many. But if we can show by science what the real damage is, then that's a step forward in many ways.
I think you're right on that. I mean, as far as genetic things, we know for sure that physiologically, individuals have tremendous differences in how they can fight off disease, how they can recover, how active they are, what their body weight is, and all these other factors, whether they're going to be inclined to alcohol or drug abuse and all this. So those genetic factors, I think, all come into play. And, you know, maybe those genetic factors are part of your entire environment and everything. Because one thing that Reyes said, and he's dealing with right now, when you got individuals coming in the military that don't have any support system, they have poor genetics and everything, their whole their structure and everything from birth has been messed up, the inclination for medical problems is going to be, and psychological problems, is going to be far worse, I'd think, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I think about the future, Doug. And if we can say, hey, in a medical physical, when you go into the service, if they're able to identify that you are more at risk, then maybe effective preventative matters can be instituted, whether it's ones if you are really highly susceptible genetically to PTSD, maybe a different field in the military, you know, something that doesn't put you directly in combat might be better. I mean, this opens a lot of doors. Okay?
I mean, you're making, what you're saying here is making incredible sense, because I know both you and I, when we both went in well over 40 years ago, the initial thing on my thing, I mean, they went through a whole analysis to put us into the super problem-solving group where we were incredible niches, and we kept up on that, but there's only a handful of people doing that, and like yourself, I mean, you went into incredible nursing and kept with it over all these years and at the leading forefront of medical nursing, military nursing. Not everybody can do that, so there's got to be something genetically, there has to be something in the body's makeup, something in the cultural, social phenomena that puts people into a better situation to do better in one area or another. I mean,
we have to look at,
sense,
you know, those that have PTSD. I mean, we look at education, we look at family background, be it alcoholism, whatever, and if we can look further to know if there is specific genes that are damaged more, you know, it's a step forward. You know, it opens the door to a wider thought pattern of what do you do now? You know, if you've identified the genes, yeah, okay, you can't really correct that problem now, but what do we do going forward?
You know, okay. And I think you're right on that. Patricia Kimmy in the last week's Army Times had a big story here, VA presser proved toxic exposure claims. Well, we know all these complex toxic exposures have an incredible effect on genetic coding in the RNA and DNA. We know that's absolutely a given fact and everything. So if you have a gene in there, that is going to make you more, how do you want to put, more higher possibility or higher probability of having a horrible effect from either a toxic exposure or from direct combat where you have these neuropsych problems and the PTSD things. Seems like if we can identify those somehow and then channel people accordingly, I mean, we're going to have it in a win-win situation.
Well, it's like breast cancer. There is some definite genes there that alert you to a problem for breast cancer, okay? And it's even led some family members that have breast cancer in their family to have that test to make decisions based on their medical of what they would do to, you know, avoid that, whether it's remove the breast so that you don't deal with it in the future. That's a pretty extreme thing to do, but if your family history and your genes show that you're at a 90% risk, then it's something you have to consider.
I'm not sure everybody understands genetic coding and how the genes interplay with medicine and all these things. I mean, can you explain that a little bit, Denise, please?
Well, I'm not a geneticist. We'd have to get a geneticist on board to talk about that. But basically, you know, in our makeup, in our, you know, we've identified, like for cardiovascular, we've identified people that with family risk factors are at higher risk for heart attacks, okay? And we try to educate people on that before they ever have a heart attack. That, you know, if you have a heavy family history for some disease, then you need to really pay more attention to it than somebody that doesn't have that family history. Now we go beyond family history of, you know, just historically that grandfather, grandmother, you know, all the way down have had high risk factors and had heart attack problems. Then, you know, we can look at the gene structure and identify them early in age and start that education process of whether it's alter your diet, alter your lifestyle, that kind of thing. okay? And genes are the makeup. It's proving what we've known for decades on family history of why we took family history as part of, you know, doing a history and physical on a patient. You look at family history, and you keep that in mind as you go forward and as you care for that person. They haven't had a heart attack, but there's heart attack history in their family. Then you need to be cautious and educate the patient about their risk factor is higher than the normal person that doesn't have that. And we're just using the science more and more that has not been there before all the work in gene makeup has been done. We are, you know, the cutting edge for the next generations of looking at this and being able to sort out problems and being more effective, hopefully.
I know I had an uncle and a cousin. Both of them died young, and a father and a son. They both died young from cardiac problems. And it was kind of like, you know, whoa, wait, where did that come from? But, I mean, it goes to point out exactly what you're saying that's also critical. Is there, I mean, obviously there's, you know, advanced testing and everything and medical testing to do and all those biomarkers that they're working on trying to find genetic and all the other markers out there.
I mean,
is
they're
there a
doing
possibility
it, you know, with
that you
high,
could genetic code
risk
identification?
I mean, there's been so much work that people that are the normal person are not aware of. I mean, there is high-risk pregnancies and genetics and, you know, seeing if there's a family history there and, you know, whether there is a way to avoid it. I mean, there's high-tech stuff going on with in vitro fertilization to weed out that as a factor of a family having to deal with that, that they look at the egg and the sperm and, you know, can decide whether their risk factors are too high if they use that egg, you know. It is getting very advanced out in the medical world. And, you know, I think we're tapping into seeing if we can isolate these genes and know who's at more risk and what that leads us to of if you are at a higher risk, then what do we need to do about it? And those are the questions that will come in the future. But the work on the hard genetic research has to be done. And one of the things that came out at the Research Advisory Committee was when the people came in that are doing the biorepository for the Guffawore error, okay? And they're taking so much blood and looking at it and only taking like a tablespoon of blood. And Dr. Hauser, a very educated, informed neurologist, you know, that's heading up the rack now, you know, had a hard question for them of why are you not taking some blood so that we can do the genetic work that is so needed. And that's what I, you know, when they keep calling me to participate, I'm telling them, hey, I'm willing to participate, but I want y'all to hear and respond to what Dr. Hauser mentioned when you came to present at the RAC. If we're going to do this, let's don't do it halfway. Let's do the thorough thing of not only, you know, whatever you're testing with the blood, but look at it that the genetic work needs to be done. And if you don't take the blood now, you've wasted time.
You know, there's something that's coming up because, again, we talked about it last week, and I know you've been involved in the discussions, and, again, it's in the Army Times, this whole discussion about putting women more in direct combat roles. I mean, the complex toxic exposures, we have all these other genetic makeup, and you were the first one to bring it up. You start seeing incredible changes in menstruation and ovulation and everything right away during Desert Storm and since then. What are the implications physiologically on the genetic coding if we start putting more and more women into this increasingly toxic battlefield?
Well, Doug, the thing you're neglecting here is we haven't done the work with the males, you know, much less the females, you know, for their genetics. Listen, I'm open. You know, Israel's had females out there serving in their armed forces in every area, okay? And I don't think we should necessarily say females cannot be in specialized units. I mean, we've got the third one about to complete, and guess what? She's 31 years old, okay? She has children, and my God, I compliment her. 37 years old, older than the majority of the males that go through it. And yes, it's taken her longer to get through it, but she's doing it. Okay, so, you know, I will not, I don't think I want to, you know, go into that discussion, but, I mean, we finally let women be pilots back in the, 89, when we first started getting the female pilots involved, and they've done exceptionally well. Exceptionally well as pilots. We've had women killed in combat. You know, I really get upset at our males saying they can't do it. Well, we have females disguising themselves in the Civil War, much less probably we go back to the Revolutionary War, but they were disguising themselves to be in the battle in the Civil War. I mean, we had nurses taken hostage as POWs in World War II. I mean, people don't know the history of females and haven't looked at female pilots and what they've done. I mean, that's going to be a discussion for another day, but, you know, what I'm pushing is that we have the ability now to look at the genetic structure, to find answers. And it's available. We should be using it and pushing that science along. And, you know, that is a lot of work, you know, the deep scientific work that's going on with the Gulf War Veteran Research and with the cohort study that we talked about, what was it, last week?
Yeah.
Of, you know, what they're looking for in sending the sputum over to Australia, sending the blood down to Dr. Klimas. Dr. Glim is having a team that involves somebody heavy duty into computer to, you know, be able to, you know, get that out computer-wise, because if you're looking at genetics and cytokines and, you know, everything we're looking at there to find the biomarkers and be able to then look at that and have that available to look and see if there's a drug out there currently that we could use or if there has to be something new developed, or do we have to go to stem cell research?
You just sent another research study where they've got another drug that's been approved for, basically it's similar in the MS, but again, you know, we're all got this stuff with fibromyalgia. I mean, it's horrific disease, and you never know what's going to happen with the weather. But again, there's got to be something in the genetic code that, again, make somebody more susceptible for MS or maybe, you know, mild whatever we've got here. And then if we can find some drug that can alter that or change that or reverse that genetic change or that physiological change, man, we're talking about improving the quality of life for a lot of people.
I don't think we can change gene damage, except maybe stem cell, but at least to be able to target treatment better. Okay? And that is all new development in the last, 20 years maybe, since the Gulf War. I mean, it's been 25 years, but genetic research is still in its infancy. Brain research, in some ways, is in its infancy. And why we've had, you know, a national effort looking at brain diseases. You know, there's a lot of scientific work that can be helpful to veterans, and it's plugging in and getting the right researchers, the right talented people. And one of the things we have to look at is, you know, with the funding in our country, where do we spend the money? You know, where do we do the most good for health, safety, security, all those type of things? You know, I don't have all the answers, but I look at what's happening, and are we cutting funds not only for the military but for medical research? And medical research not only helps the veteran and their families, but the general public.
You and I both went to that major CDC conference, and that was real interesting because it was kind of like a handful of us that are up there, and Andres Carnegie Bath is speaking his mind. God bless him. He's an angel now. But, I mean, we were here there on preventive medicine, actually talking about preventive medicine and how do we prevent this stuff from happening in the beginning. And, again, there has been, inadequate application, inadequate money, inadequate time being spent on preventive medicine and holistic medicine. And I guess I got to come back and look what Andres and Tom and Ulrich and all those guys taught us, and Bill and, you know, both Bills. I mean, the preventive medicine and looking at things and how do you prevent it from the beginning, and then what do you do once you get it, you know, to look at it holistic medicine. Well, we got to go in that direction if we're going to have any success. I mean, those guys were at the leading cutting edge of what they were doing years ago, and they're still there.
Well, and one of the things we have to look at is we haven't solved the problem of, you know, the causes of Guffor illness. There's multitudes, okay, and they all overlap and they synergistic or not. But, you know, when we went to war, they threw things at us preventatively, you know, and then they were using things tactically, like depleted uranium weaponry and other things. And I think we were 25 years ago, you know, we didn't have a lot of the science compiled and looking in the right direction. And I think they, you know, I hate to say it, I think they tried to protect, but it may have complicated the problem more. I mean, we're looking at PB and pesticides as, you know, in chemical exposure being the biggies in Guffor illness. And, you know, if we had had the work done, maybe they wouldn't have used the PB. You know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you were right there. I remember you and I were on the phone when they had the inquirer and the PB and the Shays Commission, and you went head-to-head up there in Congress with the Army's own documents, their own research, confirming that the PB tabs, which were a pesticide, carbamate-based pesticide themselves, created more problems than they solved. I mean, I remember that conversation. I mean, and you were right there that day. I mean, right at the leading edge of it. And
it's funny because Iraq has continued. The research so far is still pointing at chemical exposure and PB. You know, that are the two leading causes, as I would say. You know, we still feel like there's, you know, the potential of the other things that have not been able to be worked as effectively to look at it, like depleted uranium and the vaccines and all. But just looking at those two factors of chemical exposure from the air bombing that would have hit, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, if you go back to the Regal report and look at the exposures low level on just the nerve agent exposure, much less pesticides that was being used in theater, much less the order for PB. That would have affected the majority of the people.
You know, we had to give the anthrax vaccine because the U.S. Army got anthrax, and it's in the Regal Commission report because the U.S. Army shipped the weaponized anthrax to Iraq against the Iranians and the Iraqi Kurds, so that's a given. And then that anthrax vaccine at that time was experimental. And I think we was at the CDC in Washington, D.C. when Merle Nass came in there to present all that documentation after you and I and Sergeant Major Sauer had testified. And they shut her on down, didn't they? I mean, it was like, this is astonishing.
It was. Getting to the point that we have to use all resources, and the shame of it is that, you know, we couldn't have all this at hand when we went over there 25 years ago. And I hope that, you know, people are opening up their minds more to what has happened with our vets, to, you know, be more aware of what's going on. I mean,
when I look all over, and you and I were involved in the contamination out there at Rocky Flats right there near Denver. We got all the incredible perfluorinated hydrocarbon contamination, trichloroethylene contamination right here at Snoot Air Force Base in Rantoul. Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, as Patricia Kimmy wrote, is still a friggin' toxic nightmare that the military and Marines are trying to avoid any responsibility for. And that goes back to that memo that I got, the Los Alamos memo that Colonel Zeem wrote and I was given by General Frank, saying Lionel reports on depleted uranium because we know the adverse health and environmental effects. And so here we know we got a problem. We're using the weapons because we don't have any options or choices in combat. I mean, we have to, you know, use best weapon to kill or destroy. And yet then after it happens, we come on back and we say, well, I don't really want to admit or consider this stuff. I mean, Agent Orange is perfect. I mean, at that same hearing where Merle was telling everything on anthrax, if I remember correctly, Admiral Zumal got up there and lied through his teeth, wouldn't look at any of us afterwards, and we'd been smoking and joking with him earlier that day. And then we find out after the fact that he had, did, in fact, write that 1990 report condemning the VA on Agent Orange shenanigans, and yet he lied before Congress. I mean, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, I think what's wrong with the picture is the civilian public, okay, being aware of what all is happening to their family members that choose to serve, and the true factors, you know, of exposure, and there's just a gap in the knowledge, not only with civilian public, with doctors. I mean, we see that all the time. The doctors go, I don't know what's going on, you know. You try to give them material and they don't have time to read it, you know. But you see it with the doctors. You see it with the civilian public. You see it just, it's a huge problem. And it's like the news is flooding us all the time, but we don't step back and say, what is really happening here? And how it might affect the civilians if we don't pay attention. And, you know, I've got to hand it to a former chairman, because he and I agreed on one thing, that we needed to pay attention and learn from our veterans, take care of them, because who knows when it could happen to the civilian public here in the U.S.
And well, I think we're seeing that already, because Andres pointed that out. I mean, when we're looking at Alzheimer's and everything, and he tied it together. He said, we got the long-term exposure in the elderly population beginning with the Better Living Through Chemistry in the late 50s through the 60s. And then we saw the same effects on with Gulf War illness on these young kids and some our age, too. I mean, it was a wide age range going to Desert Storm. And where all of a sudden you have extraordinary healthy cohort that have aged to the 60s and the 70s group. And Andres and Bill Baumschweiger both came out, and same thing with Bill in Texas. You know, they came out and said, this stuff is really nasty, and we're seeing acute exposures. They're tearing up genetic coding. They're causing all kinds of physiological damage for which the body can't maintain or repair itself, and we don't have the medical care available. I mean, I understand where it happened and what happened. And maybe that's why you and I were drawn together, because when I first met you, you were asking all these questions, and the only thing that Andres and I and Tom did in Bowers Raiders is we filled you in on the information from the command staff. That's, and you had it all there.
Yeah, it was. I kind of get upset with my questioning mind. It can get me in trouble because I question things and I dig for answers. But, you know, it's really impacting us, and I think it goes beyond just the military. You know, if we continue to use pesticides that are organophosphate based, what are we doing? You know, and Agent Orange has looked at that with, you know, using dioxin substances and weed control. You know, what are we doing to the overall health of our nation, much less the veterans?
You know, it comes back to the same thing, and then we absolutely know that. Again, we've had this problem. We confirmed it down at Fort Hood, Texas, and we confirmed it at multiple bases, and I got real good friends of mine right here where the spouses got sick once the stuff came back, or we know that it was transmitted. I mean, we talked about that before, transmitted during sexual intercourse too, where now we got a problem that's, it was, you know, fairly isolated, and now it's spread wide open. I mean, it's scary when you stop to think about it.
And, you know, the toxic wounds legislation, I don't think is going to get moved, and it certainly should. The bills I brought out that ZZA, you know, coordinated, pushed for introducing them and having other veteran organizations support it. But, you know, there is a problem that we've seen with Vietnam veterans' children. And I want to make it clear to people, the only thing that's covered from Vietnam children is like spina bifida, you know, and we've seen other problems that they had that was never addressed or had any help to the families on. And then we come along a number of decades later and have the Gulf War. So, you know, I believe that the toxic wound legislation is the time to, you know, get it together for the future of families. And that is just, you know, I mean, I'm not even sure we got through the legislation for the 9/11 rescuers up in New York. You know, they were fighting for their funding to continue, and I'm not sure it got passed yet.
No, they haven't got it, you know, because too many of my guys still haven't got it, and, you know, we've discussed that before.
So, you know, our country is at a logjam right now politically between the two parties. We have the House in total disrepair. You know, we need our legislators and our politics to work and work together, and we see that falling apart up on the Hill. And, you know, it leaves me with really a feeling of despair, you know, over our country right now. And we
talk
about...
I think that hit me over the weekend because, you know, we had this stuff on the toxic compounds and everything else, a story out there. Then they started talking about radioactive dirty bombs. And, of course, you know, we left everything all over with the DU weapons and blew everything up with the radiological materials. And I mean, you ended up helping me put stuff together on that when we worked on it for Shinseki, but it all fell apart. But the other thing comes down to the core part of this thing, and you and I are both educators, and Ray's an educator and other ones, and Merle's an educator. How do we get the general public educated enough about the science, the anatomy, the physiology, the physics, the chemistry, to understand the implications? Because, I mean, all over, you and I have been together, and can you give it to me in a five-minute soundbite? And you can't even explain the anatomy and physiology in 5 minutes, much less to get into the genetic and all the damage physiologically. And I just want to scream my lungs out because you've got the general public and the legislators that somehow they missed the boat in the education, and obviously you can only learn so much, but then you've got to rely on all the experts that are out there yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs. I mean, look at Bill Meigs. Incredible. I mean, he learned under Bill, you know, another Bill, and God Almighty, he's really making a difference.
I mean, you know, we have multiple problems. If we cannot handle politics on the Hill and have people work together on the Hill and, you know, have people even, you know, fighting over climate change, much less what's happened to our bodies on exposures. I mean, we can't even have a Speaker of the House elected. We have 40 people obstructing any compromises that could happen and working together. You know, the problems are so compounded, you know. People need to wake up and take a common sense approach sometimes, and we can't seem to get our message out to people that count. We have to fight for the little bit of research funding that we give for Gulf War illness. Our veterans don't even understand how you have to fight on the Hill to get a bill through when we ask them to write letters in support of a toxic wound legislation, not many of them pick it up. So I really can't get mad at the civilian public if our own veterans can't see the clarity that they need to see to move forward, much less to get them all helping us when we have to go up and battle for funds for our research to continue to get
answers.
I was
into another store here in Champaign, one of the sporting goods store, MC Sports, and the guy was in there, and his brother, all of a sudden, is Vietnam era, and now he's real, real sick. And he himself had, you know, not really paid any attention to it until it hit home, and his brother now is extremely sick. And so we asked for help, and you saw the emails on this. But how do we get the veterans and their family members to recognize what's happening and go for help early before we hit the crisis mode? Because, I mean, there ain't too many of us left that are responding to these crisis modes and try and help the vets. And, you know, maybe Ray will make a difference with the 200 service officers he's speaking to right now. But I guess it bothers me that the education and knowledge and the admission or acknowledgement that it's messed up doesn't happen until there's a crisis. And once they hit the crisis, then they want help. And sometimes it's too late.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I look back at when we came back from the war, and I reached out because, you know, I happened to go to a couple of meetings early on and saw things happening. But, you know, the first thing we had was we had a registry with the military, and there was forethought of we need it for the veterans that are getting out of the military to be able to get registered. It's a basic thing to get on the registry at, you know, at the VA. And we had to fight to get it, and then we had to go back and fight to get the funding. And, you know, we still have vets come up and go, should I get on the Gulf War Registry? Yes. It's a simple process. You may think it's not worthy of it, but if you're having health problems, definitely you take advantage of what's been worked on, you know, to have you counted, number one. You know, then we have to go back and say, you know, you're not using the data that is there, you know. And, yeah, a lot of that data seems to have been lost, but we've got to go back and find it and put it together. But, you know, we made these steps in order to, you know, get people to register if they were having any slight medical problems even then. And to see it 25 years later and having Gulf War vets go, well, should I get on this registry? I didn't know about it, you know. You talk about education of the public. We have a need for our service organizations to fully stay on something. And, you know, when they encounter veterans, to encourage them, here, there's a registry. You need to do that. Step one. Step two. Step three. You know, a checklist type process. And, you know, we were in the beginning of using the Internet when we came home, you know, and we've branched out. We have Facebook. We have websites. And, you know, we've been building all along. And then we have people that come on and don't know even to Google simple terms to know what's being referred to. You know, they don't take their simple steps. You know, I just made a posting on a Facebook that I was going crazy today, going, people are going all over the place. And, you know, I put a simple question on, and I get a mismatch of stuff, and somebody brings up something else instead of just answering the question that's there. If it didn't apply to you, if you weren't Operation Desert Storm, please don't pay attention to this. You know, I'm asking a specific question. And then, you know, somebody brings out the special monthly compensation, and somebody goes, well, what's that? You know, I'm going, what is going on here? Do I have people that have neurocognitive problems? Do I have people that, you know, haven't really been on the Internet to know they could Google? If they could go to va.gov and do a search real quick and answer their questions? You know, it's like they're fully dependent, and that worries me. And I'm going, you know, I don't know what to say about that, Doug.
You know,
but
we go
I see
back,
a lot of that.
I go back and look at the deterioration. Both you and I love Mike Donnelly, and Mike Donnelly was an incredible pilot. I mean, flying fighters and everything, extraordinarily healthy. And then both you and I watched Michael's horrible deterioration, rapid deterioration from, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't know if it was, they diagnosed it ALS, but I don't know if it was real ALS or was a complex mixture. But the base he was at was contaminated, and then we end up with the family members right here that came to Chanute. They were there. They're sick now, and I'm dealing with rapid deterioration in one of them right now as we do somebody else you and I are helping.
Well, and I saw it early
on. It's frightening because you see that, and the veteran today in the Desert Storm vet or whether the Vietnam vet, you know, they came back and they were healthy at one moment, and then all of a sudden they get caught up, and you and I have had way, way too many where the people are extraordinarily healthy, and then all of a sudden the switch trips. And they, yeah. I mean, like Mike, he just tripped totally and was gone, I mean, in, what, a very short period of time.
Well, and I saw it, you know, online early on, and I saw some of our vets with multiple degrees that had good educational, you know, background. And yet they couldn't get a job and hold a job at McDonald's. And to talk to a mother that was a psychiatrist that knew what her son's IQ had been and had tested his IQ and that it had fell so significantly. And, you know, that was back in the 90s that I saw that happening. And so, you know, I look at the vets now and I go, what is going on here? Have they, you know, gone further down neural cognitively, memory-wise, you know? It's a very big concern for me. And
when we went to the War Injury Clinic, you know, both you and I had the neuropsych testing with Kelly, and she definitely found and has seen it and confirmed that, you know, that the memory problems, short-term memory problems, are definitely a problem of this whole mess.
Right.
And that really goes into education because you and I have both been the professor route, taught at all the different levels and taught at the university. And when the individual comes in and they've got a low reading and math ability to begin with, and then they're trying to memorize stuff and go into class and sit there and just respond, you know, short-term memory for completing a quiz or a test, chapter test. And both you and I have had the problem, and Dante calls it, you know, going off the switch, you know, perfectly well, 100% one moment, switch goes off, who am I, where am I at, how did I get here, why am I here, and where am I going?
Yeah.
And then, as you know, we've both seen it on ourselves and others, and 10 seconds later, the switch comes back on, and you're 100% functioning. There's something really wrong. I mean, Bill Bomswiger, I remember when he did the assessment, neurological assessment on Mike Donnelly and then others that weren't even connected with Mike, and the White House staff doctors are looking at him going, holy schmoly. I never forget
that. I mean,
the
look we saw it early on because our vets were young enough that they were going to college, and we had the college instructors noticing something was wrong after they came home from war. Their wives, if they were married, you know, couldn't tell them, you know, five things to get at the store and expect to get the five things back from the store if they went to the store. So, you know, there was definitely, you know, I saw it early on, and I've tracked it, and I've seen some vets really lost, and I worry about them because if they're trying to fight for their claims, they can't do it. And I identified that as a problem that they needed help putting their claims in because of these problems.
I think
and I wonder how many vets we've lost in the process that couldn't deal with a claim, and then we didn't have good helpers to help them put it together. I mean, the VA counts on you putting your claim together and putting it in.
I mean, we need to repeat, they want you have to do it yourself without any help and get all these reports and documents that they don't make available to you. There's something wrong with the whole picture. I mean, it goes back to the Los Alamos Memorandum. We know there's direct serious adverse health and effects of depleted uranium. Therefore, in order to sustain their use and avoid all liability, lie in your reports. When I was given that, and to this day, it still bothers me horribly. And, I mean, thanks for Grateful Nation, all these other documentaries we did, the stuff with the History Channel, all the stuff we did with Gary Knoll, stuff that Joyce Riley did, Beyond Treason, all these things have pointed out these documentary after documentary You got the Discovery Channel on the gene and alternate, you know, changes in the genetic code. You got all the work that you guys did at hypercoagulation. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm just thinking about what you just threw out there. Is we've done a lot of work over, you know, 25 years now, and you know we're getting to hard research, but it's like I can't get all the vets into the research. You know, I talked about that last week. The reason I went on the program and talked about the research programs and to get the vets involved. And it's, I look at the problem and I go, okay, we don't have travel funds. We have a problem with the vets getting into these research programs if they don't have the travel money. And trying to do what we can in getting answers and, you know, get help out there. And sad that we don't have the knowledge base in our elected officials. It's like we get new elected officials and we have to start from day one educating them and catching them up on that problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing. I mean, both you and I have gone into elected officials and we learned to work with the staffers and identify the problem, gather all the documentation, come up with a viable solution or viable alternatives, and present that to the legislator, not where you just identify the problem and say, well, you got to do something about it. They don't have time hardly to go to the bathroom, much less to dig into a problem, so it's kind of, you got to do the homework for them. But then again, that takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of patience.
When you have the battle between the parties going on, I mean, I just see a spiral downward for veterans right now because we have battles going on the Hill being between political parties, and you can't even get them to focus on what needs to be done.
And that's what happened to VA secretaries. I mean, the 20 years you and I've been working together now, something like that, it's a long time. But, I mean, we met one-on-one with various VA secretaries and senior leadership in the VA, and they all promised to help, but then next thing you know, they turn around, and, well, that all fell apart.
Yeah. I mean, we lose a knowledge base. You know, Prince Epi was understanding what was going on. Jesse Brown was understanding. And somehow we lost that understanding at the higher levels of the VA. And if you don't have the higher leaders understanding and being sure that their people under them are not sabotaging the effort, which happens, and it happens on the Hill with the elected representatives and senators, we're in a terrible bind right now is what I see, because we have political parties that are fighting against each other, not coming together and working on problems
within the party itself, not without across the aisle.
Exactly. And you know, we have the tremendous problem with the VA that has been cooking and being there for decades, really, and just getting worse. And so here we talk about the hard work that the researchers are doing, and they don't have an environment to, you know, have it be conducive to moving it forward.
I think, you know, the implications, I mean, right here we got a Chinook Air Force Base, and last meeting Restoration Advisory Board meeting, they confirmed the perfluorinated hydrocarbon contamination in the Wisconsin aquifer and all the creeks and the streams and land. We definitely got trichloroethylene worse in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And yet that information to the public, because average, you know, Sue or Bob, they don't want to believe that the government would lie to them. They don't want to believe that the government would, not say deliberately, but just without caution, contaminate an area. And then once it's contaminated, just walk away and want to ignore it all. it's that same thing where everybody wants to trust the leader until you find out that the leader really doesn't care about you. They just want the buck and how far they can go themselves. And that for me, I mean, you and I both ran into those people over and over and over again with horrific consequences.
Well, it's kind of like our Gulf War vets. We had a mission and a war. The leaders led us through that mission. We accomplished it. And where have the leaders been since all the illnesses have come up? Have we seen any of the generals? Have we seen any full-bird colonels to come and lead? And they've left their troops.
I remember 10 years after the war when we all went back up to Washington and you and I were standing together with Chuck Horner at the piano. And Chuck was sick and you were sick and I was sick and everybody around was sick. And Chuck said, you know, we made that decision to blow everything up and destroy it in place because we gave it to them. And you guys were right. There were going to be horrific health consequences and effects from this. And the decisions were made at those times because of combat operations and understand the decisions and why we made them and we were there. But then the consequences of decisions are now horrific, and we can't change the past, but we sure can change in how we respond to the stuff in the future. And yet we see day after day, report after report, where the military or the VA or civilian medical authorities, you just don't want to look at what the consequences are, because maybe in a sense they have to go back and say, oh, my God, I was wrong. Or I didn't recognize it. Well, hey, so what? You know, we're not God. But now we got to do something. I don't know. This has been a really bad weekend for me.
Yeah. I know how you're feeling. And we're watching our system that we count on, you know, as I keep referring to politics right now. And we see dysfunction. We see dysfunction at the House level. These are the people we elected to do the work, to appropriate the funds that are needed, to then follow up and do the right things. And it seems like things are deteriorating to such a level that I wonder what we can get accomplished. And I worry about the veterans that have been damaged. I worry about the neurocognitive. I worry about how they're doing. Are they being taken care of? How are they doing their claims when they're neurologically damaged?
I know I've had more than one spouse come up asking, how do I get this in? My husband is so sick that he knows what happened, but his ability to concentrate and focus changes by the minute.
Right.
And that gets really scary. I mean, you and I were proud members of the Air Force. I mean, you're a retired Air Force nurse, flight nurse, and everything, and I went to in the Air Force during Vietnam, and the thing that bothered me horribly over the last week and is that the Air Force, and again over in Afghanistan, deliberately and willfully attacked that Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan and killed the doctors and nurses and the patients, and I'm sitting there going, you know, that's not the Air Force I was in. I mean, definitely, if I got enemy concentration, I'm going to destroy it, but I'm not going to blow up a hospital. And it's happened over and over and over and over again. And then we look at all the work where the medical needs and medical supplies were needed to be shipped into Iraq or Afghanistan or down to Puerto Rico or to Hawaii or right over here in Indiana, and it didn't happen. I don't know. It just bothers me.
Well, I'm going to come back to basic things. You know, I see a muddle, but the only thing I can go back to is our veterans, the families, have to be the ones that keep bringing the things we put out there and trying to get them to the elected reps. We need the VA headquarters to, you know, look at the town hall meetings, and I go, what's missing is our head honchos. You know, going from West Coast to East Coast, fully publicized, we're here, we want to hear what the veterans are going through. We have the underlings that haven't done a good job holding these town hall meetings, and it's not doing the job, you know. And so I go back to the vets and to the civilians. I go, you've got to keep educating each level, whether it's your elected rep, your elected senator. All we can do is keep trying. It's, you know, it's...
One thing I'd like to recommend, I mean, all of us, again, you know, read American Sniper, and over the weekend, they had a new store open here, and I got a copy of American Wife by Taya Kyle, and I highly recommend everybody read this, because her book in here, she lays it out totally simply and plainly, and this totally disturbed me, what it was like as a wife to come up with all these problems and have to deal with all this stuff as a consequence of war. And if you haven't read it, I highly recommend that you read it. You know, you and I, we can all talk about it and bring it all up, but, you know, another perspective that you have to understand and get it and put all this stuff together somehow to sort through it and figure out how do we make it better. I mean, you and your husband were both Air Force officers and both, you know, flying, and then you're the one that went to war with a young daughter that's successful now, but, I mean, we know the impact on her over the last 20 years has been absolutely staggering.
Well, as I said, Doug, we're to the last 10 minutes of our show, and we've kind of gone all over the world here in our conversation today. And I want to encourage that. Keep trying to educate others, be it your representative, your doctor. It's all we can do.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Denise. We'll continue our conversation. God bless you.